Here, welcome to Behind the News. My name is Agatha Samuel. Tonight, Ghana's economic woes. Is it the fault of the finance minister? We have a view from an economic consultant. Chiefs of Yellow Cover jumps to the defense of Setepe, saying the troubles of the economy are not entirely his fault. Sada, the sad tale of a development initiative to uplift the poor in the north. And the Northern Group asked President Mahama to retrieve all SADC monies with interest. We shall interrogate all these stories on the program tonight. Be my guest for the next 1 hour or so as we discuss these stories. You can also join the discussions by text 0266-677570. 0266-677570. But first, Naija Bliago is here with a summary of the day's news.
As part of government's effort to improve electricity generation in the country, an institutional biogas digester has been inaugurated in Kumasi. Speaking at a ceremony, the Executive Secretary of the Energy Commission, Dr. Ofosu Ahinkra, said the move forms part of measures to ensure swift development of the renewable energy subsector. Vice President Papuchimi Sasa has arrived in Houston, Texas for this year's Offshore Technology Conference. The conference is considered the world's single largest gathering of offshore oil and gas industry players. A statement signed by Presidential Staffer James Ejinim Boateng said the Vice President will address the conference and also hold discussion with the Ghanaian community. A financial analyst, Isaac Adongo, says government has created a contingency fund to cater for workers' increased base pay. In an interview with Radio Ghana, Mr. Adongo was optimistic that a reintroduction of COLA will cushion workers as a result of economic challenges. And Ghanaian road contractors have raised concerns about the amounts allocated to the road fund, describing it as inadequate. They said the local construction industry cannot be grown in a partisan manner where a succeeding government does not continue the projects of a previous government. The association at a news conference in Accra called for government's intervention.
It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana, Accra. Behind the News, it's also live on Radio Central 92.5 in Cape Coast, Sunrise FM 106.7 in Cofodia, Radio BAR 93.5 in Sunyani, and Radio Upper West 90.1 in Wa. To say Ghana is experiencing some economic challenges is to state the very obvious. At this year's National May Day Parade, President Mahama gave the assurance that Ghana's economy will show strong signs of recovery by the end of this fiscal year. While the president is confident that economic policies will deal with economic challenges, some people want to blame the situation on the finance minister, Setepe. There is a school of thought which argues that this is not the time to engage in blame games about the current problems of the economy. So if no blame game, what should be done? And we will be talking to Dr. Kwame Ejay, an economic consultant. But before we talk to him, calls for the finance minister to be sacked has taken a new twist, with chiefs from Yellow Club or traditional area coming to his defense. Speaking to Radio Ghana, the divisional chief of Plow Yilo Krobo, Nene Tete Agbleze, said calls for his dismissal are tarnishing the image of Yilo Krobo and the minister.
We are not very much abreast with what the Mr. Alote Jacob did, because in actual fact, it is the president who nominated Setepe to be the finance minister, and he has been vetted and taken on, you see. So for him to do anything of that nature or to come publicly to do something like that, at least he must have consultation with the executive of the NDC. Moreover, Seth is not doing things on his own. He introduces policies, and the policies may be discussed by the cabinet before it comes out. So he just can't accuse him for being Judas. And the term Judas, I think you know what we say about Judas in the Bible and all that, which is a very negative name in the Bible. So we don't expect Mr. Alotejo to say something of that nature.
But Nene, with the questions people are asking are that you are a chief and chiefs are supposed to stay out of politics. So why should you come and defend the finance minister when he has his own right to defend himself?
Yeah, I know. We don't have to play politics. But the statement he gave is not based on politics. It's just to spoil the man. And that man, that Setepe, it's my subject, my direct subject. So when he says that, then it means he's disgracing all Krobos, you see. So this is where we will come in. But we are not talking in terms of politics.
Are you satisfied with the performance of the finance minister?
Oh, yeah, but even if I'm not satisfied or satisfied, it will be within the domain of the executives of the NDC.
That was the divisional chief of Plau Yellow Krobo Traditional Area, Nene Tete Akleze, talking to Bright in Trauma. And the United Cadres Front of NDC in Manya Krobo has also waded into the debate. They say the finance minister Setepe has proven himself to be a man of public probity, putting the economic interests of the nation before narrow sectarian concerns and personal gains. In an interview with Radio Ghana, the chairman, Comrade Jembi Lawe, said Mr. Tepe has done away with unsustainable financial policies that are harmful to the economy. Now let's go to the phone lines and speak to Dr. Kwame Ejei, an economic consultant, to share his thoughts on the predicament of the nation's economy. Good evening, Doc, and you're welcome to the program.
Good evening to you and good evening to your listeners.
Doc, you've been listening to us. Is the call to change the finance minister the solution to Ghana's current economic challenge?
Thank you very much for having me, and good evening once again to your listeners.
Doc, if you could raise your voice a bit, we can hardly hear you.
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yes, it's much better.
Very good. Good evening to you and good evening to your listeners.
Good evening.
I think what is happening now is a very serious situation. Very serious in the sense that Ghana's economy, and like all developing country economies, are facing shocks from the global international scene. And because Ghana is not in isolation, Ghana is particularly facing this particular challenge at a time when the finance minister, Mr. Setepe, is in position. We have behind the headlines heard what the president has said, that yes, this is a transformational period, and therefore all Ghanaians must have confidence in the economy. Now, Mr. Setepe is having much of a challenge to wade into an economy which is really not having the shock absorbers to absorb the international pressure that is coming from the global scene. Now, Mr. Setepe, as you know, has had various varied experiences, especially handling financial situations. So it is not a call for personalities now. It is not a time to hound down Mr. Setepe now. Setepe is facing, and the economy is facing challenges, but he is abreast with time and is handling the situation very, very carefully. What are the challenges that the economy is facing? The challenges are, number one, the fact that there is the automatic price adjustments formula, which has now removed the subsidies on oil, which means that prices are becoming very volatile on a day-to-day basis. That is a fact. And if prices are becoming very volatile, very changing, there is only one way, and the one way we can do now is to be able to absorb as much tax revenue from the Ghanaian economy and from within as much as possible. And this tax policy is what Mr. Setepe is pursuing vigorously. Aside from that, we have also seen the single spine has had a very thorough issue and debate over the airwaves. The single spine, colleagues of mine have said, it has become very unsustainable. But the point is, the government has been able to project this single spine policy to the extent that we should now, as a nation, relax, sit back, and then weigh what are the pros and cons, what are the outcomes of the policy that has been implemented. And this is exactly what a nation should be doing now, rather than saying that we should be going in for a pay rise. I am very quite happy that the outcome that has been reached by the Tripartite Commission on Wages with the government is the best situation. Perhaps a massive pay rise of about 20% is not the best time, and it's not the best thing to do at this time. And therefore, I foresaw what Mr. Pepper did when he went to Parliament to say that we should put a freeze on wages now. He had perhaps overshot the gun. But the point is, the wage settlement that has been reached has far below, weighed what organized labor has been expecting. So yes, the point is that this is not a time to have a wage, a wage increase. So yes, the increase from 5.6 to 6.2, as a minimum wage is accepted, and that will be implemented. Coming on to the COLA issue, that is also accepted, and that has been, been implemented. So yes, these thorny issues are very, very important, and they must be seen in the global light of the situation that Ghana is facing now. And it's not going to be a call. It's not going to be in the interest of Ghanaians to rally around and say, let us fire a finance minister who is capable and who is on top of the ball at this particular challenging time. Number three, this is a transformational time, because we will have to invest and make sure that we consume as much as possible that are made in Ghana. Because of the structural position of the economy, we should be able to transform our behaviors, to be able to transform our attitudes and say, look, let us be rather export-driven rather than an import-driven country. Because if you import, what you are doing is you are importing inflation from abroad. And if you import inflation from abroad, prices, domestic prices, will by all means rise. If you counter that to the fact where you have a wage rise, if your pay increases, I will not be able to stop you from importing abroad. So a wage rise, for example, might signal people spending abroad and buying more to worsen the domestic inflationary position. So yes, Mr. Tepe is doing very well in the face of all these structural challenges. And therefore, there is no need at all to worry. He is on top of the ball, and Ghanaians should have confidence in the person as the finance minister.
Now, Doc, looking at an economy of a third world country like Ghana, what kind of pressure does it bring to bear on the managers of the economy?
Well, remember that we are a very small nation in the committee of nations all around the world. And because there is globalization now, it is very important that Ghana cannot insulate itself away from whatever shocks or whatever waves that are blowing abroad. By all means, it is very simple now to travel from, let's say, a developed world, say the UK or the US. It takes only about 5 hours or 6 hours to travel there to here. And even that is by trade, because you can always be influenced. So economies can always be influenced rather now, more than so many years ago, when we were not in a globalized economy. So finance ministers in very small developing economies like Ghana are facing challenging times. Challenging times in the sense that, one, they cannot control the trade, the influx of trade that is coming into their country. Now, it's not only trade, it is the movement of capital. Capital has become so simple to mobilize that, look, if you do not lay very much hands on your own internal capital, foreign capital may come to dominate you. And that is a pressure. That goes to put pressure on the exchange rate. So now we do have a balance of payments problem, and then we do have an exchange rate problem. These are the various shocks that are impacting on a small country like ours. And these are the challenges that the finance minister is facing. For example, Ghana has had to borrow so much money, to be able to finance its infrastructural development. Money has been borrowed. Now, Mr. Stephen now has to look at how he can be able to match these long-term and short-term borrowing. It's got to be, interest has got to come down so much so that, yes, people will know that, yes, if they have got, governments have borrowed so heavily over the years, but the problem is now with Mr. Setepe. And what he's trying to do is to say that, okay, now, if these massive amounts of money have been borrowed at a higher interest rate, then he must be able to reduce the interest on those loans that have been borrowed from abroad and look at either matching them with short or long. So these are some of the challenges that the sector is facing.
Doc, let's talk about the Bank of Ghana's directives banning transaction in dollars in an attempt to address the depreciating CD. As an economist, how did you receive the Bank of Ghana's directives? And 3 months on, how would you assess the bank's decision?
I think what the Bank of Ghana did at the time was great. Number one, it was good in the sense that the Bank of Ghana itself said it was a short-term measure. Now, the central bank has a policy, and that has a monetary policy. What the bank cannot do is to be able to pump in so much money at all times. Now, the situation that Ghana is facing now is very crucial because the signal sent from the Bank of Ghana has got to be supported with actions that are within their economy. For example, if investors have confidence in the move by the Bank of Ghana, then our CD will be restored. If there is credibility, then our CD will be restored. But people and consumers and importers are saying that no, that is not the best way to handle it. So credibility and what people say about the policy goes to affect the market situation, and in so doing, goes to affect the central bank's objective. Remember, the central bank is only one particular central institution that can effect a change in the monetary mechanism of the economy. All other things, for example, change in behavior, change in interest rates, and change in attitudinal behavior can only be undertaken by the people within an economy. And if people within an economy do not buy what the central bank is doing, then it's going to have a very negative impact. Remember, the central bank also said that each policy that it announced has now got to be followed to the letter, and it's got to be policed. So you had institutions, you know, that have got to propel what the central bank's message was. But has this been very effective? They have not really pursued the agenda to the vim. And people are very different. Some traders, some business people are withdrawing their capital from within the system. And that is what is happening now. So people are undermining the central bank policies directly. These are some of the bigger scenarios, bigger issues that we can look at and say these are the reasons why the central bank's objective is not holding through.
So how should the Bank of Ghana deal with that situation where people are withdrawing their money from the banks?
Now, the Central Bank of Ghana can only do one thing, and that is exactly what it's done. You see, we have various other institutions like the IOCO, you know, bodies that have been tapped, like those banks that bring capital from abroad, for example. They should have sit down together. They should all sit down together with the central bank and say, look, it is true that the economy is heavily dependent on imports. And if imports are the situation, if imports are causing this particular problem, then they have to look at maybe the import licenses that are given out. Okay? And then the change in behavior will have to be gradually looked at. Behavioral change takes time, but eventually it pays off. So continuous dialogue, for example, with the Treasury, for example, with the Central Bank, and collecting all these AGI, the industries together, at the roundtable conference, together, but not in isolation. You see, if these bodies are seen to be working together, then we can see a gradual change. But where we have the Association of Industries working separately, we have various investors working differently, we have the Central Bank of Ghana issuing policies from afar, as it were, then policies do not seem to to be attended. That is what exactly has happened now. And people are beginning to undermine the very good policy that the central bank. I think it's a very good policy that if you go to certain countries, you will see that there is pride in their local currency. For example, if you travel to South Africa, you cannot spend a foreign currency in South Africa. The rand is the first thing you have to spend. If you travel abroad to the UK, to the US, it is the currency you have to spend. But over here in Ghana, what investors are doing is to charge, for example, you go to hotels, they are charging you in dollars. Real estates are charging in, you know, foreign currency. But that is wrong. So what happens to the local currency? The local currency is not being considered as a valuable means of exchange. That is wrong. That is wrong. So the attitudinal change, the love for the country, the love for the city, the love for the currency must be prime.
And do you suggest that import licensing fee should be increased?
I think the regime where we have free import licenses given out is wrong. If licenses fees are increased, there could be a way that investors and traders will by all means pay the higher import license, which will eventually trickle down to the consumer. So my argument is that, okay, import licenses should be given, but should be restricted to, for example, you know, goods and services that we do not produce in this country. But where you import rice, sugar, you know, everything from toothpaste, I mean, we should consider that critically and have a second thought and say, no, these are things that we cannot grant import licenses for, and we are not going to import these things as a nation. We can, and as a people, manufacture them over here in Ghana. So yes, the issue about import license should be looked at again. It should not, I mean, it should not be controlled. It should not be minimized. And of course, prices should not go up, because if they go up, they may eventually come down to affect the local consumer.
Now, Doc, as an economist and a keen economic watcher, would you say there is light at the end of the tunnel?
I think there is. I have a 90% belief that, yes, if we have attitudinal change as a people, begin to have confidence in our central bank, begin to have confidence in our finance minister, begin to have confidence in the policies that are being pursued by the nation. Yes, there is a little bit of sacrifice to pay for the greater comfort. There is a structural change, which is very difficult, because as a people, you find it very difficult to change habits and norms. Okay? Now, we must consume made in Ghana goods. But how do we, as a people, you know, consume made in Ghana goods? We have to accept that, yes, if we start now, generations upon generations will begin to consume made in Ghana goods as opposed to foreign goods. Foreign goods are going to have, let's say, a higher finish or finesse. But we as a people must know that this is what we are producing now, and this is what we must consume. So there is light at the end of the tunnel if we as a people adopt and change our consumer behavior, our attitudinal change, and accept that, yes, this is where we are now, and this is what we can produce. For example, when on Fridays, you know, we all wear made in Ghana outfits to work, it pleases everyone. It pleases the supplier, it pleases the tailor, the seamstress, and it pleases the person who wears it. That is the beauty of being Ghanaian. So we must build on these issues, and this will eventually go to build our industries, our factories, and create employment and jobs for our people.
All right.
This is the light at the end of the tunnel we're talking about. Okay? If we are able to expand the economy in this way, then, yes, we are providing a future for our young people. And this is where I see that there is a future for the policies being implemented now by the government. Yes, right. You know, importers might say it is too harsh, but it's a small price to pay. All over the world, there is inflation everywhere. You know, it's not when Greece went through this turmoil, It was bailed by the World Bank. Spain went through. And all countries are going through. So make no mistake, it's not easier anywhere in the whole world.
All right.
We are better as a nation producing and exporting rather than importing and consuming.
All right, Doc, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Dr. Kwame Ejeh is an economic consultant. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana Accra. Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana Accra. Behind the News is also live on Radio BR 93.5 in Sinai, Radio Upper West 90.1 in Wan, Volta Star Radio 91.1, 91.3 in Hull. Let's read some of your text messages. And Andrew Manga in Boko says Ghanaian workers must sacrifice and work hard to put the economy back on track for development. Johnny Nwa says, please, we would be happy if the health minister comes out to talk about trainee nurses' allowance as much as she talks about health issues in the country. Please, we need assurance. And I.A. Yahuza from University of Ghana says, government should get back all monies that individuals owe the state for infrastructure and human development. Monica Cones in Avungo says, His Excellency the President shouldn't allow chiefs to dictate to him as to what to do. He can hire and fire if the person is not performing. Many thanks for your text messages. Behind the News is also live on Yira Radio 89.7 in Bolgatanga and Radio Savannah 91.2 in Tamale. Established as an independent agency aimed at coordinating a comprehensive development agenda for the three regions of the north, the Savannah Accelerated Development Authority, SADA, has however come under the spotlight for all the wrong reasons. SADA has been embroiled in allegations of corruption and misappropriation. This has compelled the president to sack the chief executive officer and also constitute a new board to run the authority. However, with all these interventions, the Northern People's Forum, a non-partisan civil society group that is concerned about the development of the northern region, is asking the president to retrieve with interest money spent on all the various projects undertaken by SADA. In a statement, the group said the president must settle once and for all the controversies surrounding the SADA projects. The spokesperson for the Northern People's Forum, John Krugu, has joined me on the line. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you and good evening to your listeners.
And John, if you could lower the volume on your radio set. What do you want the president to say again when he has asked the former CEO and constituted a new board?
Yes, thank you very much. The president indeed has sacked the CEO and appointed a new CEO. He has also put in place a new board. But there have been critical issues. I mean, the president did not take those actions for nothing. There are reasons why the president has to take those actions. And let me give you a little bit background about SADA. I mean, SADA did not just come into being. SADA is a product of several years of advocacy by different interest groups who has the interest of the North at heart. And this is, we're talking about the three northern regions where 6, 7, 8 out of 10 people are living below the poverty line by any standard. This is the situation in which the north of Ghana finds itself. And this is why SADA came into being. When SADA came into being, it gave hope to the people of northern origin that over the years, it's almost like the place has been left into the hands of NGOs. But now there is a government agency that is dedicated to the development of the north. So all of us had hope and high hope for very good reasons. But recent revelations in the management of scarce resources have left everybody heartbroken. And to think about it, that the management of SATA has been done by Northerners. The chief executive officer was a Northerner, Mr. Alaki Gilbert Diddy. The SATA board was chaired by a Northerner, Mr. Al-Hassan Andami. And it is happening at the time when the president of the republic is a Northerner. I mean, come to think of it, that they said that they have used 32 million Ghana cedis to plant trees. For heaven's sake, they could not even consider the very people who are living in the Sahara zone, that the places where you are saying you have planted the trees, there are human beings who are living there and are capable of seeing a tree or seeing a bare footed land that is lying there. And somebody has gone to erect a signboard on that land, claiming that it is a SADA afforestation zone. And you look into the land and there is no single tree. Then you hear a report saying that 5 million trees have been planted. And then you ask yourself, where are those 5 million trees? Because we who are living in the SADA zone, we cannot see those trees.
Does it mean that, John, you have visited some of the SADA project sites, and can you tell us what you saw there?
And what I have seen in the SADA afforestation project site is only a signboard which is erected and with a statement that SADA afforestation project. There is nothing on those lands. And I have made pictures and videos to show to the whole world that there is nothing in any of those lands. And yet we are told that our money that belongs to the people of the Sahara Zone, 32 million is being spent into planting those trees. It didn't end there. We are told that Sahara signed a contract with a contract for cosmetic industries, which belongs to the Adams Group of Companies, under the leadership of Roland Agambide, himself also an owner. And that 50 million cedis have been paid into a Kundaba Kotek industry for a guinea fowl project. But as I speak to you, that particular Kotek industry is located near Sumburumu between Borgakanga and Nabromo. If you go there right now, you will not even get up to 100 guinea fowls in that particular house. Yet, they are saying that that infrastructure and that investment there, SADA has paid 15 million into Akontawa. And then in 2013, we were all in this country when SADA management went to parliament. They were looking for money. They told the whole world that SADA process is empty and they need resources to be able to bridge the developmental gap between the north and the south. Yet the revelation we have now is that 75.5 million of SADA money have been invested into standing bank account called the call account. At the very time that SADA board chairman was Mr. Al-Hassan Andani, who is also the managing director for Stanbic Bank. And we think that all these cannot be thrown in. There is worse things like that. We are told from the audited report that came out that decisions were made even without the approval of the board.
Well, John, we cannot verify what you are saying now, but hold on briefly. Mutala Mohammed is a Deputy Minister of Information and Media Relations, and he joined the discussions. Mutala, welcome to the program.
Thank you, and thank you to good evening to your listeners.
Mutala, how sad is that SADA story? Because your critics say all the guinea fowls and plantations are nowhere to be found.
Well, let me first and foremost say that the concerns that are expressed by the people of this country, not only people from northern Ghana, are concerns that are of tremendous interest to His Excellency the President and the Government of Ghana. They are indeed of importance to the government, and particularly the President, because of one or two reasons. One, SADA was actually created to see one of the means through which the gap that unfortunately, that was created by colonial, actions and inaction, and subsequently that was pursued by some of the developmental projects or policy initiated and implemented in this country that has created the gap between the North and the South, that SADA was created as a means of trying to see how best that gap can be bridged. And to that extent, it's of tremendous concern to His Excellency the President, and I believe to well-meaning Ghanaians. It is also of tremendous concern to His Excellency the President because he is coming from that part of the country that unfortunately is lagging behind in terms of developmental needs and the needed jobs that are created. For which reason, His Excellency the President and the NDC thought it wise as a social democratic government to initiate such a project. So if the implementation of the project within SADA are abused or the entire program is abused, it certainly would be a worry to all of us, and it is a worry to His Excellency the President.
Well, so we are asking now, where are all the guinea fowls and the plantations?
Well, let me say that at any point in time, people who are asked to manage programs, and those programs were asked to be managed, sadly, by a person who is also one of the kind, who is a northerner. That's on tobacco cottage industry. It's a cottage industry that was run and is being run by one of a northern brother. To the extent that when there are allegations that are leveled against the management of programs under SADA, and those allegations are not left unattended to, I think the people must understand the interest government has and the determination to ensure that things are done rightly. Now, if you look at the issue of SADA, it came up in Parliament, contrary to the view that is held by many people, that the issue of SADA was something that came as a result of a media reportage. That is absolutely far from that. I remember the Finance Committee when this issue came. All members of Parliament, whether majority or minority, took one position, and the position was that there were certain things that indeed did not go right as far as SADA implementation are concerned. And therefore, government's attention was drawn to retrieve the ministry that is responsible to see the implementation of SADA. And that is how come that the contract of the initial SADA board was not renewed. Let me state that it was a contract that was signed, entered into. Someone was supposed to be the chief executive. His contract ended, but because of some of these reasons that were raised, government felt that there was a need for the contract not to be renewed. And that is not to suggest the one who indeed was handling it was engaged in something illegal or corrupt. But the fact is that there are concerns that I expressed, and government was so sensitive about those concerns. Let me also state that subsequently, there have been a lot of concerns raised about the board and others, and that has occasioned the dissolution of that board and a new board being constituted or reconstituted.
Well,
if people have problems with SADA, the problems are being investigated. Government has not indicated that nothing is going to be done about SADA. And I think that we are missing a lot of things. People bring in GIDA and others. When people are not aware that some payments have been made with some interest.
Well, now, talking about payments with interest, the Northern People's Forum, a non-partisan civil society group, is asking the government to retrieve all the monies spent on the various projects undertaken by SADA with interest, and the spokesperson is on the line. What are you telling him and the group?
I like I said, it is of concern to everybody, and everybody in this country, you don't necessarily need to be a northerner. You have the right to demand that things are done rightly if you perceive things to be wrongly done. And to that extent, the concern or whatever group, I don't know them, but I just want to believe that they are indeed a genuine group, a group that certainly would have the North at heart. If they are making such calls, what I can tell them is that government is not going to leave any stone unturned to ensure that SADA indeed achieved the purpose for which it was introduced. And government is not going to leave anything to go unattended to. But if there are concerns that have been raised, those concerns are being looked at. Mind you, day in, day out, issues come up as far as that is concerned. To that extent, a resolution of the problem that have bedeviled SADC cannot be an event. The resolution of those problems certainly would be a process. And to that extent, I would only urge them that in as much as it is appropriate that they call and demand that certain things are done right, they should also exercise some patience and restraint. That something is being done is not as if government indeed has turned a blind eye to whatever is happening in SADC, and it is not as if government sits unconcerned. What is significant is to ensure that the right things are done, and whatever it will take government to ensure that those things are done rightly, so that SADC achieve the purpose for which it was introduced, government will do that.
Mutala, indulge you briefly to hold the line for me. As I go back to John, you heard the Deputy Minister on the line. Are you satisfied with his assurances that they are leaving no stone unturned in this SADC issue?
Well, thank you very much. And I think that Honorable Mutala has spoken well. What we are asking is what he says, that government leave no stone unturned. What we want is not another SADC that will say that there is no money to work, and therefore the development of the SADC zone that includes the three northern regions will remain as it is. And that the money that were paid to Asongaba Kotik Industry and to ACRL for appropriating for them, and none of those things have taken place, that the money will come back. I hope that leaving no stone unturned is what it means to me. And we are going to look forward to that. We are going to watch. And I'm happy because he himself is a northerner and he can understand the issues that I'm talking about. That the situations we are confronted with are real issues and they are critical issues. So nobody should take people for granted to the extent that you put a signboard behind my house and say you are planting trees, and I walk behind there, there is no single tree, and yet there is a report that is saying that 5 million have been planted. That is the greatest insult you can give to any group of people.
All right.
But I'm happy that the Honorable Mutala is saying that government will leave no stone unturned, and all of us of people of northern origin are looking forward and watching to see that no stone will be left unturned, and that every single city that has been mismanaged by anybody will be brought back to the SADC office.
Right.
And once that is done, then we know that the new chief executive will have a reason not to walk the same path that the former chief executive has walked, because if you have spent the money anyhow, and the only thing that can happen to you is that you have been removed and a new person replaced, what is the assurance that the new person would also not take lessons from the old person and also embezzle whatever money that he or she will come to see? And we are saying that for the president to send that clear message to all of us and bring hope back to SADC.
All right.
That is indeed going to address the developmental gap in the north.
John, your point is well made, John. We want to thank you for your time with us tonight. John Krugu is a spokesperson for the Northern People's Forum. And coming back to you, Mutala, somebody from the northern part of the country and also an MP, and putting your political affiliation aside, are you happy with the way the SADC project has gone so far? Because I believe it's a project, as you said, meant to bring the development gap between the north and the south.
Well, let me say that, like I indicated earlier, I don't think that anybody will be happy about a program that indeed was established to achieve a purpose, and you find the kind of problems, whether those problems are true or not, because we are still verifying to ascertain whether indeed trees were planted or not, considering the fact that there have been conflicting reports that are given. You have a journalist who comes out and says that, look, trees were not planted. Then you have a reputable institution like University for Development Studies, which I have no reason to doubt the integrity of that institution, because after all, they have no interest as far as the tree plantings are concerned. The only interest they have is that those trees, if they actually planted, would endure to the benefit of the people of the north. And to that extent, I don't think that University for Development Studies would just concoct stories and say that, look, there have been some success. So I want to believe that there have been some success because the university has capacity to determine whether indeed the trees planted have yielded some successes than a journalist or a media house. And I think that point must be made and made clearly. Let me also state that if you looking at the reports, either a journalist who doesn't have the capacity to do that, even though he has done an excellent job, I would not indeed underestimate what the journalist has done. But I'm also looking at the capacity that the institution has to do. I think that government is so much concerned, and I believe that if government was not concerned, government wouldn't take the kind of actions government is taking with regards to SADC. But it is significant, and in fact essential for us to state, that it is not fair for anyone to conclusively say that the former CEO of SADC and the fact that he ended his tenure and then a new CEO was appointed, the fact that he was not reappointed doesn't mean that there was any, if you like, adverse finding against him and that he was engaged in any corrupt practice. I don't think that is fair. I think it is also significant for us to understand that when you have a program like SADC, and in these stories I imagine, as to some alleged misapplication or appropriation of resources, you know, it's a process. You don't rush into taking an action. You need to ascertain what the problem is, such that when you find a solution to it, you don't come back to where you are. And I think that that is very, very important. But let me conclude on this, that the impression is being created. If you monitor the media, as if SADC is the only developmental agenda that is meant for the people of the North. I want to make this point, and I make it clearly, that SADC is just part, one of the developmental agendas that indeed will be used to bridge the gap between the North and the South. You have listened to people who create the impression, particularly media houses. As if without SADC, people of the North are completely doomed. And therefore, if there are problems that are affecting SADC, people of the North should throw their hands in despair, put their two hands on their foreheads and start crying. I think it is unfair. The people of the North deserve equal opportunity like any other person in Ghana. And it is not for nothing that such attempts are being made to bridge the gap that exists between the poor parts of this country, not only the three northern regions, other parts of southern Ghana that are indeed very poor, the gap that are indeed created, unfortunately, by the activities deliberately or unconsciously by the colonial masters, to which certain policy interventions failed to bridge those gaps.
But
the gaps that are created when we have an intervention like SADC, another developmental agenda that are geared towards indeed bridging that gap, the impression should not be created as if it is a privilege, or it is a privilege that is being given to the people of the North or the other catchment area.
Mutala,
it is not a privilege,
yeah,
it is a right.
Briefly,
it is a moral duty.
We don't have much time, Mutala. Briefly, why is it that since this issue broke about the SADC, we've not had any formal response from government?
Why would formal response as in what?
As in the issues that the journalist brought out about SADC.
I don't think that it's accurate to say that you haven't had formal response. And indeed, we have been speaking on the issue of SADC. SADC management, you have been speaking on the issue of SADC. Government has taken certain steps. And in fact, reconstituting the board of SADC itself is an indication. And that reminds me, I think that there isn't any suggestion anywhere that the chairman of SADC or the chairman of the board of SADC in the person of Mr. Andani has been cited anywhere as having been engaged in any illegal activity. He doesn't own Stanbic.
All right.
And I think that it will be fair that when we are making our analysis or calling for some or making some demands, justifiably so, we need to also be very fair to the people that who have managed either the board. He doesn't own Stanbic. He happens to be the chairman of the SADC board. And therefore, if there are concerns about certain dealings with the bank is an entity. The bank is not Ms. Andane. Ms. Andane is not the bank. And I think that we need to look at it in that perspective.
All right.
So government has indeed taken a lot of steps. Government has responded repeatedly and unabatedly to some of the concerns that have been expressed by people. Government only knows and thinks that we must solve the problem so that we don't come back to where we are. And that is a process, not an event.
Mutala, I want to thank you for your time with us tonight.
Okay.
Mutala Mohammed is a Deputy Minister of Information and Media Relations. So how sad is the SADC story? And are there no positives that have been chalked up? We have on the line Communication Specialist at SADC, Edem Wolanyo. Good evening, Edem. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, good evening, and good evening to your listeners.
Edem, what can you tell us about the whole SADC project and some of the success stories?
It's rather unfortunate that all that the media is talking about is afforestation and guinea fowl. And essentially, SADC has embarked on so many projects. Last year, for instance, we have an agreement with Yenko Ghana Limited to, you know, implement a project known as the Sisal Coupon Water Management Project. And essentially, this project is to provide some irrigation canal for farming activities within the northern region, the Agaba to be precisely. And this is a huge project that SADC is initiating, and nobody is talking about it. And it's interesting to know that the Dutch government has supported this project with an amount of 11.2 million euros. You know, and it's ongoing. The project is ongoing, and nobody's talking about it. All that we are talking about is guinea fowl and afforestation. And unfortunately, you see, the president, in his own wisdom, realized that there has been a problem, and he quickly called for the abrogation of the project. So I don't know why we keep talking about the guinea fowl, the afforestation. We go forth and back with this whole project.
Well, so Adam, we don't know, and the people want to know, apart from the guinea fowl and the plantation, what else, what other projects are being undertaken?
Again, we have, how do we call it, a solar energy project, that is a 40-megawatt project that is currently being implemented. And this project is between SADC. It's a partnership between SADC and Solar Giga, a company of Germany. And it's a huge project that is going to provide energy source to the people and eventually create jobs for our people in the north. Again, we have, how do you call it, the hydrogen technology building system, which will import some kind of technology in terms of construction of buildings. Currently, we are doing, how do we call it, a pilot project in a town called Taha in the northern region. This is a 10-classroom block that SADC has started. And this is supposed to be a pilot project which will give us the leeway to go into housing projects. And we've imported 50 hydrofoil machines from South Africa. And these machines are supposed to move bricks, you know, that are supposed to construct buildings for our people in the northern region. And nobody is talking about it. We keep talking about those things in the media, yet the media is not interested about all those things.
So you are saying that SADC is not a failure. It's being discussed all over.
I don't know. I mean, how can you say that SADC is a failure? When SADC started just 2 years down the lane, and everybody is expecting heaven to come on earth, it doesn't happen anywhere. Look, it's interesting to know that SADC is an initiative that has never happened in the face of Africa before. SADC's mandate is a 20-year mandate. And just 2 years down the lane, everybody is talking about the failure of SADC. SADC is not a failure. Look, we have agric input support services that is ongoing. This particular project, or the agric input service, it is supposed to provide, how do you call it, tractor services to our farmers, provide seeds to our farmers, provide fertilizers to our farmers, even extension, you know, services to our farmers. And it's ongoing, and nobody's talking about it.
All right, Adam, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Adam Wolanyo is a communication specialist at SADC. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. And our Northern Region correspondent Mutala Issa has visited some of the SADC project sites, and he's also joined us on the line. Mutala, welcome and good evening.
Good evening, Agatha, and how are you doing?
I'm good. Mutala, what did you find during your visits to the SADC project sites?
Well, my tour took me around the five regions. That is the Northern, Upper East, Upper West, parts of the Volta region, and then the Bona Afo region. Now, in the Northern region, we visited an area called Kukobila, where we have mango seedlings, being transplanted onto a field of about 32 acres. We also saw a butternut farm, which where some butternut squash had been harvested, but I understand they do not have the market currently. So as we speak, the crop is at the Sada farmhouse in Kukobila. Now, we went to a village called Kokoligo in the Upper West region. It is between Ghana, Burkina Faso, and the Ivory Coast border, along the White Volta, where we saw 6-hectare banana plantation. And this plantation is actually thriving. I understand from the farm manager there, Mr. Gibrentus, he tells me they have already exported some banana to Burkina Faso, and we could actually see that the banana is fruiting quite well. Now, to the Volta region, we visited Kete Krachi, that East Krachi, and then the West Krachi area, where mango seedlings are being again transplanted. We also spoke to some farmers who told us how SADA has supported them with inputs. I was in the Busa, a village in the Wa municipality, where a farmer showed me a bicycle. He claims he used to ride in the past, but because of SADA's support, he's been able to buy a motorbike now, and he's also put up a 3-bedroom brick house.
Well, Mutala, so who were some of the officials with you on this tour?
Well, these there were two officials from SADA and some my crew members from the Ghana Broadcasting Corporation. Yeah.
The officials, what was their impression about the project you visited?
Well, actually, I'm yet to go into the details of their impression. I have not spoken with them. They just took us around to see this. So we are putting things together as I'm speaking now. So we have not actually spoken to them about what exactly their impressions are. We are just speaking to the people on the ground to see what the beneficiaries of SADA programs have to say about SADA.
And talking about these SADA projects, what were the views of the residents in these communities? What did they tell you?
Yeah, I must indicate that SADA took us there, and we met people from the communities who SADA brought for us to interview. And I must be honest with you, they were very impressed. Some of them are indicating that they want the SADA program to continue. They are very much appreciative of what is happening. We were in Buna Hafu a couple of days ago, I think 3 days ago. Amumaso, that's the name of the village, on the Accra-Tamale Highway. And the lady told me in the past she used to work with her husband on the farm. But because of the input support and the tractor services she has received, she's been able to wean herself from the husband. She now has her own farm, and then she produces corn and sells it back to SADA and makes her living out of that.
Mutala, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Mutala Isa is a Northern Regional Correspondent who visited some of the SADA project sites behind the news. And we want to thank you for all your text messages. This is where we wrap up for tonight's edition of the program. Armstrong Agbewonu controlled the sounds. Nadabli Ago read the summaries. And my producers were Edmund Tetefelis Kofi, Bright Agama. My name is Agatha Samwan. You have a lovely night.